Oh my God, it's Valentine's Day.
Woo!
Or as some white trash call it, Valentine's Day, but it's good to be here nonetheless. I am joined by AC, who is on the phone.
Hello, Ray.
How you doing, AC?
Man, I'm doing good. Happy, as my family would say, Valentine's Day.
That's Valentine's. I love people who call it Valentine's instead of Valentine's. And growing up in Gillespie, as I did, I knew people who called it Valentine's.
Those are the same people that called it Biscotti, right?
Yeah, it was Biscotti, and there were many. There were many differences in those people compared to me, and those people. There's actually a lot of those people still around now, and even more prevalent than ever. And AC, it is good to have you on, man. First off, for those people going, who the hell's AC? AC, give a description. Where are you, or where did you come from? Where are you? How did you know the show? Fill us all in.
You know, I'm a kid from the South originally, born in Arkansas, grew up in Louisiana, but migrated up to Springfield where I worked for WIMG for a couple of years back in the days that you were with QLZ, and always was a fan of the show back when, you know, it was you and Bodine and Jim the Photog and all those guys. And I am now in New York City, where I've been for 4.5 years now, doing stand-up and writing. I'm actually staring out my window. I'm in Astoria, is where I live now. But doing a lot of stand-up, a lot of writing. It's been a really good year. I sold my first option on a TV show this year. It looks like we're about to get a contract on a second one. So
that's awesome.
Just living the dream.
How many writing partners you got?
I've got one.
Yeah. Oh, really? That's not bad.
Yeah,
okay.
She's based out of L.A., and she, you know, I think the worst thing that she ever did was sign up with me. The best thing I ever did was sign up with her, because I can't imagine how difficult it is to work with me.
Well, I mean, whatever's going on, it clicks. You know what I mean? It's clicking, and that's a good sign.
And yeah, well, it's clicking very much for me.
I love it, and to actually get, you know, an option, that's pretty good. Congratulations to you guys. That's fantastic.
Thank you, Ray. I appreciate it.
And I thought it was, I mean, and by the way, as a stand-up comedian, it's a long line of stand-up comedians that, I mean, there's so many people associated with the old Mid-Morning Disaster who are now stand-ups. And I mean, and playing all over the place. There's a couple other guys in New York City. There's guys in St. Louis. There's one in Kansas City. There's one in Peoria. Brando, of course, is in St. Louis. Chris Wernowski, who is big on the show, he's in Cleveland. I mean, there's stand-up comedians everywhere, and I think I'm so jealous of you guys. So I think it's fantastic that you guys do that.
You know, the very first club to ever pay me was the club there in Springfield. That's not where I started.
Right.
But the old Funny Bone was the very first club to pay me out of Springfield.
I'll be damned. Well, good for you, man. And you, how many nights a week you do a stand-up?
5 to 6 nights a week, usually. I try to take one off. I've got a really fun show coming up this Friday night at New York Comedy Club. It's called Paid or Pain. It's a live taping for SiriusXM. And if we're funny, we get paid. If we're not, the audience gets to vote on this, by the way. If we're not funny, we get beaten by a dominatrix.
Oh, my God. What channel? Is this on the Comedy Channel?
Yes, it's on Raw Dog Comedy.
Oh, Raw Dog. I have Sirius. Yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I've done it once before.
Yeah.
Actually, live in the studios at Sirius. And I was funny, but the dominatrix chose pain anyway.
Oh,
and
God.
They saved a special treat for me. It was the electric wand. And when they put it on my nipple, we turned on all of the monitors in the studio and shut down all of the computers.
Oh, that's
so that was
fantastic.
The last time that they let them use the electric wand in the studio.
That is fantastic. So let's get this right. The concept of this is that you perform, you try to be funny, and then the audience decides if you were actually funny or if you weren't and you get to be beaten by a dominatrix. Well, let me just go with this setup. There's very few audiences that are going to decide anybody's funny.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that is fantastic. They're going to choose some type of punishment. That concept is fantastic. That's a concept the disaster would do. I would love that. I wish I would have thought of that. That's a fantastic idea.
It's put together by a guy named Jay Nogg. And, of course, they have regular booked comics that work regular at that specific club. And I do stuff in New York Comedy Club. But if they have two or three that aren't competing, maybe the ones that are a little bit more afraid. And then they put four of us up. And so you're guaranteed to at least see two or three people have to pick from the wheel of punishment. And whatever it lands on, you get, whether it's getting paddled while you wear a pair of pink panties, the electric wand, you get flogged, or the clothespins on the nipples. It's always a very interesting night.
Oh, that's fantastic. My God, that's a great idea. I really like that idea. That's
Ray, it does export. The show does travel some. And if you wanted to put something together in Springfield, I'm sure Jay would be up to that.
Yeah, if I was younger, here's the deal, AC. The older I get, I think the lazier I get. I think I was willing to do those things years ago. Now I would love to do it, and I tell myself, oh my God, this would be great. I'd love to do that. I'd love to do it. But when it comes right down to it, I would end up, this is the night I'm going to do it, and then I just end up staying on the couch and watching TV, which is sort of is the point I was making yesterday about, I don't know if you heard, but Metallica is coming to Busch Stadium, and there's a bunch of people excited about it. And, I mean, they're really excited about it. They were all over Facebook yesterday talking about, Metallica. They're great. I can't wait to see them and blah, 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 blah. And my attitude is that it would cost the promoter $500 to talk me into leaving my house and going to see Metallica in St. Louis. I think $500 would $500 would get me out. It might not, but
they would have to pay you to see Metallica.
Yes, they would have to pay me to go see the concert, and it's because of there's a laziness with getting old.
Well, and I mean, I understand. I'm about to have my 39th birthday.
Yeah,
and my rule always was the answer is yes. What's the question? Don't care what it is. Let's go do it. And now somebody could be like, hey, man, come to the other side of the room and look at this bug. And I'd be like, take a picture of it with your iPhone and text it to me. I'm not getting up.
Yeah. It's when we were in our 20s, there's nothing I wouldn't do. Now, there's a lot of questions going to everything.
Ray, let me.
How's it going to affect my knees?
Does that include private time with your wife?
Yeah, I'm pretty – no, I thank God. I'm pretty good with that, it being Valentine's Day. I'm pretty good with not turning down sex. However, there was a moment when it looked like it could happen. My wife was beating around the bush with it,
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of dismissed it casually. And the main reason was I wanted to have sex, that's cool. But I really didn't want to shower and clean myself. And, there's a lot of work into sex.
Yeah.
It really is,
Well, and, I think for me, being in my 30s, and dating a woman in her 30s is kind of proof that God has a sense of humor. Because in my teens and 20s, that's all I wanted.
Right.
And now a lot of times, given the choice between sleep and sex,
I may choose
sleep and hope I have a good dream.
You'll pick the sleep. I know. With me, it's the shower. I'm like, my wife she gets to go lay. She lays in the bathtub, She lays.
Do you really get clean that way?
Yeah. I don't know, but it seems to make her happy. And she uses, like, she'll use these several soaps, and she's soaping everything, and she goes to this store called Lush that has these bath bars, and then she gets out, and she's very sexy, and she walks down the hallway, and she dries off in front of me, and puts on, you know, if she puts something, I mean, there's a whole process, you know, but that sounds very relaxing, you know, for me. It's almost like foreplay for her. For me, I got to go to the shower. First off, let's admit something that people don't usually admit. It is a lot harder to shower than it is to bathe, okay? There's a lot more work that goes into showering, especially when you have to clean around, let's face it, a man's privates. There's a lot more stuff going on down there. And so I get worn out. I mean, I get worn out.
It's Valentine's Day. Why don't you try this?
All right.
Why don't you take the bath with the bath bar, light the candles, and then get out and dry off all sexy in front of her? You think that would work?
No, no, no. Because my wife wants to get in the bedroom. She does that sexy thing, you know, mm-hmm. And then she saunters towards me. But right before sauntering, she turns the light on. All right. During the sauntering, she turns the light off. And then she joins me in the bed. The last thing she wants to do is be reminded that she's having sex with me. It's the one thing. I'm positive, and I mean this, I'm positive that she has closed her eyes. Every time we've had sex, my wife's eyes are closed. She does not want to be reminded that she's having sex with this.
Who is she thinking about?
I don't care, and I don't know. I don't care. It's definitely not me. It's because she wouldn't be so damn good at it if she was thinking about me. You know, there would be a repulse, a level of repulse that would be so high. There's no way that I could be the person that's on her mind, and I'm okay with that. But the lights are definitely off.
Did she go through a 50 Shades of Grey phase?
No, we never went full on 50. Never went there. Now, you know, we're probably, I mean, my wife and I have been married. This is, I'm going to probably forget. It's going to be 25 years in April. We'll have been married. And we lived together for like a year and a half before we decided to marry. So we've been together. We've been together since 1990.
Wow.
Yeah, we were young. You know, we were young when we got together. And we've been together ever since. She is she's my perfect companion. My perfect
so
soulmate.
She lived with you for a year and a half?
Yeah.
And didn't figure it out then?
And still decided to marry me. And listen, wow. my wife and I, we never had a wedding. We never had a wedding. We never had a reception. We didn't do any of that stuff. We literally took a vacation to Las Vegas. And when we were vacationing in Vegas, we got married and then came home. And like my coworkers, they were, you know, we were all at work. And the guys of the show looked at my hand and said, "What? You got a wedding ring?" I said, "Oh yeah, I got married." I mean, it was that crazy, and we just didn't make a big deal about it. We just decided to get married, so we've never had a big anything, and we've never been we've never gone 50 Shades of Grey. We've never been kinky. We've never been we just are who we are. You know, I do feel like it's a real love. And I would be shocked. The biggest shock that I could get would be my wife telling me that she wants a divorce. That would shock me more than anything in the world, I think. That's how, you know, that's just how close we are. Now,
well, Ray, I'm actually an ordained minister. I got ordained online, kind of on accident. I was online just wanting to see what you had to do to get ordained. And I went online and said, are you interested in getting more information? And I clicked yes. I filled out a form. I thought they were going to send me like a packet with some information, maybe a Bible, something. And I clicked it and it said, congratulations, you're ordained. So I've married couples in Central Park. I've married people in bars. The weirdest one ever, I had this couple call me, kind of like you. They had lived together. They decided spur of the moment to get married. They called me and said, hey, we really want to get married tomorrow. So can we meet at your house? So I show up at my house and the groom is there with no bride. And I take them, we go inside, we sit down, and you know, I'm trying to poke around the corners and, you know, hoping he's going to tell me either she's running late or she stood him up or decided not to get married. So after 20 minutes, finally I go, hey, is Nicole ever going to get here? And he looks at me and goes, oh no, she couldn't get off work. We just want you to sign the marriage certificate.
Oh my God.
So I was like, Chris, I have to call her to make sure that she's not like locked up in a closet somewhere, because that could kind of be bad for me. I called her at work and she actually was mad that I was calling her because she was busy. I was like, look, either you get married or you don't, but I have to ask you, do you yeah. want to be married to this guy? And of course she said yes. He said yes. We signed the paperwork. The witness was there, signed the paperwork, and then off they went. That's the weirdest marriage I've ever seen.
Oh my God, that's insane. So the yeah. she never even showed up.
Never even showed up. I've seen them since. They're happy. That was yeah. 6 years ago. They're still married, but yeah, they got married. One of them at my kitchen table, the other sitting in her cubicle at work.
So marriage was, for them, it was an inconvenience.
Yep.
It's just like, you know, can we just sign the paper? That was their attitude.
That was their attitude. Let's just get it done.
You think they'd at least want a good story.
Oh, yeah, you know, but that's a pretty good story.
Yeah, no, it is a very good story. For you, I'm just not too sure. I mean, maybe the husband can say, well, yeah, the day we got married, he could tell the kids, well, your mom yelled at the guy marrying us for calling her at work.
Yeah.
I just, yeah, I mean, it means different things to different people, I guess. But, I mean, to us, it's just our love, I don't know, I'm not judging the level of our love. I'm saying that it just seemed more important than all that other, you know, bullshit. Well, just, you know, us.
And, you know, for me,
married.
I'm probably the last one to judge anybody's, that should judge anybody's family. Something you don't know about me is my mother chose to remarry after my father passed away, and she married my cousin's ex-husband.
What?
Yeah, it takes a second for the math.
Okay.
He used to be a member of my family.
Okay.
1 year at Thanksgiving, 20-something years ago, stood up, said, I can't stand you people, you're crazy, and he left Jerry Maguire style. Just gone.
Really?
So when she started dating again,
right?
Now, he's not my cousin. He was married to my mom's first cousin.
Okay. Oh, all right. I thought you said your cousin. I'm like, oh my God, wouldn't there be an age difference? That's insane.
But now here's the weird part, though. Right. He has two kids. I have a stepbrother and a stepsister that are my cousins.
Oh my God, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a brother cousin and a sister cousin.
Do you get along with them?
We get along really well. I don't see them a whole lot because they live in Arkansas, but I probably didn't have to tell you that.
Yeah, but I mean if you hit it big, say the shows you're writing, all right? Say they, one of them gets huge, okay, and then Hollywood says we want more and we're going to give you an option. You know how the dream that can happen to anyone who's writing, and it happens to you. Your stuff's good enough, you get picked up, and then the fame comes. And I don't know if you're going to be starring in your shows or if you're just writing them or whatever. But either way, say there's fame, hypothetical fame, which I hope is real. Don't get me wrong. So hypothetical fame. Would these family members be willing to – would they call you and come out and celebrate your fame? Or are they the type that would just that wouldn't care?
they would all be really supportive of any kind of win. They wouldn't think it was that big a deal because it didn't take place on the farm. I mean, in all seriousness, it's like Bessie won first place at 4-H, and, you know,
so
that's a big deal.
They'd be more excited about that than they would be you selling a show to Hollywood.
No. Oh, I mean, plus you load them up in the Winnebago or whatever it is, and you have 30 of them driving cross country. That would be a show in and of itself that would probably be more entertaining than anything I could write.
I wonder if those family members, through marriage, if they do they get excited about the other family? Like for example, my father remarried in, oh my God, the 80s, okay? I mean, it's that long ago. My mother and father got divorced. I think I was 12 years old or so. I don't know. It was a long time ago. I think I was 12. And we had six kids in our family. My father divorced and he married somebody else. And she had two kids. So I grew up with a stepbrother and stepsister who I know them. And I know of them because they live here. I mean, they live in Springfield. So I've been around them most of my life. But I don't know them really well. And I know my stepsister better than my stepbrother. And you wonder if they, their kids graduated high school and college. You know, we didn't get any invites. There was never anything like that. And I know the kids. I like the kids. I'm even friends with them on Facebook. But there's no joining of the family for that, if that makes sense, you know.
For us, they would probably be excited because we were cousins that grew up together.
Okay, so you've known each other longer.
We've known each other forever. But not necessarily as the stepbrother or the stepsister.
But now you're actually directly related to the parents. And
yep. So like brother cousin would be happy as the cousin, not the brother.
I do love brother cousin. That's great. Yeah. That should be your next show, brother cousin.
You know, I tell a story about going hunting where they and it's there's a lot of pressure if you're from the South to kill stuff, right?
Yeah,
like you grow up and you got to kill a deer, and there was and they worry about me because I'm in New York, and you know when I moved, the first thing my mom told me was, well, don't get weird. You know, that's what she said. Don't get weird. I don't know what she thinks happens in New York, her biggest fear.
She thinks there's a bunch of people that are trying to turn people into different lifestyles that people in Arkansas don't understand. Don't get any queer on you up there in New York.
Well, that that happens a lot, you know.
I can see
I was home at Thanksgiving, and, you know, one of them walked up to me, and they were like, you know, we really want you to go hunting with us. You've never been on before. You know, I mean, you know, we worry about you. You live up in New York. You don't have any kids. You're not married to that girl. We're worried you're queer. And so I looked at my sister cousin and was like, okay, I'll go hunting. But when we're in the pickup truck, it's like this old S10 pickup truck that we're all four of us crammed into. It's like my cousin, like the real kind of cousin, like whose dad's not sleeping with your mom, my brother cousin, my sister cousin, and me. And ever since I've gotten back and I start talking to people about, you know, brother, cousin, sister, people pee their pants. But when I talk about, if I try to talk about that on stage, it's so far removed from the realm of anything that could be real.
Yeah. They don't believe
that people think it's made up.
Yeah. That's great. Well, I mean, did they pressure you in Arkansas when you were younger? Was it, come on, let's go hunting. What are you, a pussy? I mean, I don't know how that all goes down.
There was a bunch of that, you know, and I was born in Arkansas. We've got a farm there, and I grew up a lot in North Louisiana, and that ugly part of the world they call the Arklatex. I love all my friends back there because they're all firemen and teachers because that's all there was to do. But yeah, there was a lot of pressure to go hunting from family members, from other people. And for me, you know, when you go deer hunting, you're supposed to go to the bathroom before you go to your deer stand because deer can smell and they know that a human's been there, which is a sign that sends them away because they don't want to die, which is probably the first sign we shouldn't be hunting them.
Right. Absolutely. The fact that they're aware enough to figure that out is pretty good indication that we really shouldn't be killing them for sport.
Yeah. Especially with, like, I mean, anybody that needs to kill a deer for food, anything like that, that's great. But, like, the guys with the high-powered scope that are mounting it on the wall, I don't get killing it for sport.
Yeah.
But I did agree this time to go with them just to get them to leave me alone. And as we get out there, we get out of the truck a couple of miles away from the stand. And we, you know, and first of all, I didn't know the thing about the bathroom. So I was confused because I knew we were like 2 miles away from where we were supposed to be going. And I knew there was no way sister cousin was walking all the way to the deer stand because she's not walked 2 miles cumulatively in her entire life.
Except so, not.
Yeah, so they explain it to me that we're going to go to the bathroom. So I go behind the tree. My brother cousin goes behind the tree. Sister cousin goes behind the tree, but she's a big enough girl that you could see her around the tree.
Oh,
and then
God.
my cousin, the real one, goes to the bathroom. Like really, you know, answers that age old question: does a bear poop in the woods? And we all get all done up. We get back in the truck, and you can smell that maybe he's stepping. So, Ray, we all get out of the truck, and we're looking. Can't find it anywhere. Get back in the truck. Still smell it.
Oh, no.
Get out of the truck. Can't find it anywhere. Keep driving, and it stinks. But we all get out of the truck. Sister cousin gets all done up, goes off in the woods to kill something. Brother cousin gets all done up, goes off in the woods to kill something. I get all done up, get ready to go sit in the deer stand and take a nap. Cousin gets all done up, and he looks at me and he says, I really am proud of you. We always wanted you to do this. And we as worried just a little bit queer up there in New York. So this is, thank you, come give me a hug. And I hug him, and he really stinks. And he pulls up his hood, and I learned a very valuable lesson.
Oh, God.
Make sure that hood's not between your legs. And it takes 2 bottles of shampoo to get all of it out of your hair.
Oh, that is great. Oh, man.
We did not get any deer that day.
Yeah. I think the scent of – there was a scent throwing them off. Couldn't figure out what it was, but there was a scent.
Yeah.
Throwing them off. Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
That's what happens when I go home for the holidays.
Oh, what a fine family you have. How long?
You know, they're good people. They're just different.
How long have you been in New York?
4.5 years now.
And you like it? I mean.
I love it, Ray. It is the greatest collection of small towns in the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, there's like little communities everywhere.
Every time you see a new Duane Reade, which is like our version of Walgreens, actually it's owned by Walgreens, but if you change the name, New Yorkers won't go there anymore. every time you see a new Duane Reade, you're in a new little neighborhood.
Where do you live? Which place do you live?
I live in Astoria in Queens.
Oh, you live in Queens. Okay.
Yeah, so I lived in the financial district for the first 3.5 years.
I mean, that's
and now
cool,
I'm
but
in,
everything's so everything's so small and expensive in Manhattan.
Oh, it's that way kind of everywhere. I mean, we were in a studio downtown Manhattan. It was over $3,000 a month.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but it we've moved out to Astoria now, and it's about $1,000 less a month for an apartment small enough that, I mean, I like it, but you get angry about things that you didn't know you could ever be angry about when you lived in a space that small with one other person. Like, you find yourself sitting there going, why is she breathing? Can she just stop breathing?
Yeah, I don't, and I know that the thing with New York is, if you live far enough away for the price to drop, okay, it becomes such a pain in the ass to get back to the city to work. So people are sort of trapped in that area of paying the higher rents.
I mean, yeah, it's either that or you have to commute, you know,
yeah,
an hour and a half on the Long Island Railroad.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's so inconvenient just to save money on rent, you know, or to own. The commute is so long that, like, for example, my cousin works for Microsoft, and he and his wife and his they lived in New York for a while. They lived in Manhattan. They ended up getting a decent apartment in Manhattan, and he was going to work every day at Microsoft. And I think she worked in education. I don't know if she was a teacher in New York or not, but she was doing something. And they had an apartment in Manhattan, and he makes a lot of money from Microsoft. And but his entire, like, almost all of it was spent on the apartment. You know, there was no savings, there was nothing. It was just to live. And eventually because they lived in a nice apartment, and eventually they moved out to Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
And there was a time he left Microsoft, and then he got a job as a vice president with some new startup company that had developed this new thing. And then Microsoft bought it or something, and he came back to Microsoft with a raise and stock, you know, because he had left, and there's a whole thing. And then he got even more money, and so they moved to Connecticut. And he loved living in Connecticut because they owned, it was, you know, it was so nice when they were there. But his going to work time increased from, like, 5 minutes or 6 minutes walking to Microsoft's building in Manhattan to now, like, an hour plus in Connecticut. So the inconvenience in time made it that he was leaving for work, you know, 2 hours earlier, and he was getting home 2 hours late. Even though he owned his own place, it sucked because all his time was spent traveling from the city and back. And then eventually he got transferred to Boston and then Chicago. But I mean, but this—that's what was the misery was with New York City is if you want to cut down your travel time, you have to live in the borough that you work.
Uh huh.
And it just became too much. So even people who make a ton of money, it's such a pain in the ass to live far away. Now, when I've gone out to New York, when I've gone out to you know, sightsee in Manhattan or something, I stayed in Fort Lee, New Jersey, which seems fairly close. You know what I mean? I've never had a big delay getting into the city. Now, somewhere like that would make sense to live, and then the travel in.
The big problem with that, though, Ray, is you're in New Jersey. I mean, stereotypes are at least real for a reason,
right,
on
yeah.
some levels.
Right.
And Jersey lives up to that most of the time. And everybody tells me, no, you got to come to the, everybody's got their own part of Jersey. And I've been to almost every county in New Jersey now for one reason or another, doing somebody's bar show. I filmed a couple of movies that I had starring roles in, some independent films down in Jersey. They were gangster movies. Imagine that. but I've been to almost every county, and I've not found one I liked. The ones that they say are nice are, and all of a sudden I'm alienating 1/50th of the country right now, which is probably not a good idea. But the towns that are neat are the same little bitty towns I left from the rural South. And so it's either Jersey Shore,
right,
or a rural little town I had no desire to be in. And, you know, you talk about the commute, though. I was talking to a friend of mine that lived in Long Island the other day, and he makes really good money. And they've got a pretty big place out there, but they could afford to come in if they would get a slightly smaller place, just square footage-wise, but still bedrooms for all the kids. And his wife was really pressing him to do that and was asking him why he wouldn't. He said, "You don't understand. I love my time on the train." And I said, "Why?" He goes, "I even sometimes choose the local stop train instead of the express train to spend another half an hour to 45 minutes on my way home." And again, I said, "Why?" He said, "Because I hate my kids." And then he immediately followed it up with, I love them, but you know what I mean. I hate my kids.
I thought kept thinking there was something work involved or there was something productive in him riding the train other than just the hatred of his children.
He gets to play video games on his iPad, watch a movie, nobody's whining. And I mean, I would never be a proponent of somebody hating their kids, but I mean, I understand. I'm not a big fan of children myself. Go ahead.
If it makes your commute better, you got to do what you got to do.
It's not doing the kids either sometimes that are the pride. It's the parents that let the kids run wild drive me insane.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we all know parents like this. We know parents who are raising children their own way. Well, we choose to do it our own way. And it involves letting your kids do whatever the hell they want, letting your kids run all over you, and letting your kids break shit when they're over at my house. And that does, you see a lot of parents like that.
They look at you and say, "No, we don't tell them no. We don't use that word."
Yeah, yeah.
When I went home for the holidays, I was in the mall in Nashville, Tennessee. And this little kid ran past me and like almost knocked me over. Like, I mean, I barely like grabbed onto the wall, didn't fall, but almost knocked me over. And I see a giant fat woman chasing the kid with a flip flop in her hand, which is the preferred method for beating a child in the South, by the way. And she's chasing after the kid and she goes, "Spatula!" Like she's yelling, "Spatula." That was the kid's name. She stops because she's out of breath. She goes, "I have two words for you." Two words, she said, "Ray. Behave." We wonder why he's messed up.
And that's what you just hit it on the head. Parents, the real reason that kids go around acting like assholes, you know, like it's not all kids, but those kids that go around acting like assholes, they go around destroying everything in their path and not caring. The real reason they do that is the parents are lazy. Because I can tell you, my wife and I have one child, and she's an amazing kid. My daughter is an amazing child, but it was a lot of work. A lot of work to raise her. And it was a lot of work by me. It was a lot of work by my wife. It was a lot of work for us. Every second of it we loved, but I'm saying there was a lot to it to raise the kid. And you have to spend time with the kid. Because if not, you know, your kid could grow up weird. Your kid could be an asshole. There's a lot of bad things that can happen. And you see these parents, and number one, they have too many kids. Number two, they don't pay attention to their children. They just let the kids do whatever they want. And when you have like a 7-year-old doing whatever it wants, that's never good. You know, when you don't give clear borders for your child to do what they're supposed to do, you know, like clear lines of, this is the line you do not cross. And if you cross it, there's going to be blank, you know. And you have these parents that are convinced that they know how to parent better than anybody else, even though they've never done it before. And it's also developed with the laziness that they possess. You're going to end up with a child who's an asshole. And that's the problem with so many kids everywhere. This is everywhere. This isn't just in one area. The South, of course. The South, of course, is more known for it. But it's everywhere where there's kids who are just making people crazy with the way they run around and react and embarrass. And there's a lot of bad stuff going on from people's laziness. Very sad.
Well, and not to disparage the entire South and the parents and all the parenting there. I mean, I see horrible parenting in New York, and I saw it when I lived in Springfield. And yeah, I mean, it's lazy, like you talk about, and it's not just the South, but the Southern stories seem to just be funnier to me.
Yeah, they're funny for a couple reasons. They're funny because you've always got the accent that you get to use the accent. I always love it when you get to use I guess this is more of a South Carolina accent, whatever I got going on there. But when you're in the South, number one, you get to use the accent, so it's funny. Number two, it's so far away. So you get to fool yourself into thinking, oh, that's far away from me. So it really doesn't exist. Or it exists so far away, so it really doesn't matter. But the truth of it is, man, these people are next door. They're not just, they're everywhere. Oh my God! Yeah,
in New York, they're right on top of you. I don't know what goes on in the apartment above mine, but every morning, all I can figure out is the mom gives the kid a pair of her high heels to wear, and lets the kid walk from one corner of the apartment to the other, and back and forth. Doing like lines, because it literally covers every inch of my floor my ceiling for about an hour every day.
I listen, we all have neighbors that are questionable. In New York City or in one of the boroughs, you're right on top of each other because it's all a bunch of apartment buildings.
Uh-huh.
Hey, I don't know the shape of your apartment, but do you ever worry about like the infrastructure and the build? Is there ever any fear that like the building can all come down?
The buildings are old, Ray, so absolutely. It's not so much that the entire building is going to fall,
right?
But that you're going to step on that one floorboard one too many times.
Yeah.
And your leg is going to be downstairs in the neighbor's apartment.
Yeah. And they're going to use it as God knows what.
Yeah.
Maybe food.
And, my downstairs neighbor is an angry Greek guy.
He could possibly turn your leg into Euro meat. You gotta watch.
I think that's what does come in Euros. Also, in my building, it's for people that have never been to New York and never seen a television show. A lot of the times, below your apartment is a doctor's office, a law firm, a Chinese restaurant, which don't ever move into a restaurant, a building with a Chinese restaurant under you because it smells good for a day. And then the rest of your life, you smell like General Tso's chicken, everything you own.
You get but sick of it really quick.
Really fast.
Oh, that's great.
But in my building, there's a doctor's office and a dentist office and some sort of physical therapy office. And so you do get the random buzzer where people are asking you to come in. And you're like, no, the doctor's office is next door. But the doctor's office specifically, not the dentist, not the physical therapist, the doctor's office is behavioral health specializing.
Oh, great.
In criminal behavior and aggressive behavior. They get really angry when they ring my buzzer and I won't let them into my building. Can't reason with them.
I mean, yeah, those are wonderful people to have running around at the neighbors.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, you know, I would think one of the more profitable jobs in the New York area would be owning a building. I mean, if you could just own a building, you could do pretty well. I know rent control exists and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, just with renting the retail places or just the business places, you can do pretty well.
It's very profitable. My girlfriend actually works for a property management company, but the rent control, there's rent stabilized rent control.
Right.
And rent control is going more and more away. And that's where basically you live in the apartment like they had on Friends, which is how they justified the giant apartment. It was her grandmother's lease, and it's handed down to person to person to person, and it's $800 or $1,000. Those are going away because you're not supposed to actually be able to transfer that lease to anyone. And it's beyond the suspension of disbelief that that person could still be alive.
Right.
With few exceptions. But those people will tell you their landlords, you know, don't, there's no upkeep in the apartment, things like that. And so it's a really profitable business to be in. And like the building we're in is not rent stabilized at all. So they could come in and up at 12 to 15% every year if they want.
So yeah, you know, you're going to pay more rent every year that you sign a lease.
Yes.
I know that there's, and this is why they like to build new, is once you tear a building down, it starts all over again, even in rent control areas, correct? And that,
correct.
And with the shoddy state of some of these buildings, you would think that would be something that we would work on. But there's a lot of buildings who are flimsy and that are, let's face it, they're rat-filled. They have a lot of, I know people didn't expect to hear this in this podcast, but there are a lot of buildings that aren't that well kept, and they probably shouldn't exist. And they're filled with refugees and maybe people who don't have a lot of money or whatever. And so the landlords just don't care. But the building's there until it falls, and so that's what scares me. Like, I mean, I've had the chance to move to New York several times. And I love when I go, I love New York. It is the most amazing place in the world. It really is. It's unlike anywhere. But just the fear of living in New York, you know, kept me from even considering it. You know, my agent was there and I like it, but the thought of living there scared the hell out of me from things like, what if I live in a building that falls down? What if I'm involved in this or that or blah, blah, blah? But that is a general – that's a really big concern.
Well, Ray, as long as you're in the building when it falls down, that's not much of a concern. Because you don't have to buy new stuff at that point. You're done.
Yeah.
You know? So – and there are building codes and things here in the city.
It's a quick death.
It's a quick – it's just there are a lot of parts of the city, some really bad apartments and places that people pay ridiculous amounts of rent to live in. But Ray, let me tell you, when I got here, I came for the first time to visit 10, 11 years ago. And within half an hour of being here, I knew I had found home. It just took a while to get here.
Yeah.
It's just the pace, the speed, New Yorkers have a reputation for being rude. But we're just busy. And normally when I dissect somebody's story, you know, they tell me I was in New York and they were mean to me. It's because they weren't following the rules of New York. Like, perfect example, if you're online at Duane Reade and there are like 20 people there, and I just, by online, I mean in line. But if you're in line at Duane, not on the internet, but if you're in line at Duane Reade and there's 20 people in line, and you get up to the counter and you don't have your money out and you start to fumble when it comes time to pay, somebody's probably going to go, what, you didn't know you had to pay? But they're going to yell at you like that. But you were being rude because everybody else has got their money out.
You must constantly be moving in New York City or else they're going to yell at you. Do you get that person that goes, oh, Jesus Christ?
All the time. But that's normally.
Are you kidding me?
But you've got a family of four, right? This is another New York rule. You can only walk two by two. That is as wide as you can walk down the sidewalks.
Yeah, you can.
You'll have a family of four stopping and looking at buildings and blocking the entire sidewalk, and then that is where the guy goes, Jesus Christ, come on!
Do you have a car?
I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. I MTA and Uber everywhere.
The majority of I read this. I forgot the actual statistic. In New York City, the amount of people that own cars is very small. I mean,
it's a very small percentage.
Very small. And people just get around in ways other than a car. And the reason is, I'm guessing, is the cost to park makes it not worth it, and the travel time makes it not worth it.
The cost to park, the travel time, and then just the accessibility of mass transit here. And, you know, I mean, not just subway and bus. There's Uber, Lyft, Get, but then there's also the Chinese cab companies that you get a number, you call, this guy picks you up, you load up in the car with them. You have to pay them cash, but it's cheap. I mean, it's so cheap to get around. So, you know, when you look at how expensive New York is to live, but you take out the fact that I don't have a car payment, I don't have insurance, like car insurance, I don't have gas, I don't pay tolls, I don't have to put tires on, no maintenance, anything else like that. Disposable income, if you manage it right, works out to be about the same.
Yeah.
The big, as when I lived somewhere else and had a car, but the big difference is that disposable income doesn't go as far.
It is. It does seem weird now that you mention that. You could see the savings in an area that's so confined, such as New York City. You know, all the boroughs, and you can see that how it would how not having a car would save you money. I mean, think about it. Does the money you spend on Uber or the subway or taxis or anything else, does any of it equal up to the cost of a car payment?
No. I mean, I can unlimited subway and bus, $135 a month.
Oh, that's
and I think
bad.
That's $2 higher than it really is.
Right.
And then, especially if you're willing to use an Uber pool, you can – I Ubered yesterday. Something that was a 17-minute ride cost me $11. And if I was to take the train, it would be 50 minutes. And it would still cost me $3.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a confined area. Are the subway trains, are they super busy? Are they super crowded? Are you ever getting them when they're not?
So, fortunately for me, you know, my schedule is different. I don't commute in when everybody's going to work most days. Or out when most people go in. You know, like if I'm coming in, it's to do a set. And then I'm coming home at 2 o'clock in the morning when most everybody's been gone. But there are days, like if for some reason I have to go in for a meeting or an audition, it's 8, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, you might have to wait 3 trains to get on, and you don't have to worry about holding onto a pole. It's so jam packed. You're not falling down. You're held up by people.
See, I know I'd hate that. I would, because I'm claustrophobic. I would hate that. I really would just, I would hate being that crowded in a subway car. That would scare the hell out of me.
It's not pleasant. It's necessary at times, but not pleasant. I mean, and the other alternative is, you know, I mean, we walk a lot. I mean, on average, 8 to 10 miles a day.
Oh,
just
wow.
Just going places.
Yeah.
And when people come to visit, New Yorkers will always tell you, oh, it's just right around the corner.
Which could,
they're so used to it.
Which could mean several blocks. It could mean several blocks. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, New York, especially Manhattan, everything looks so close. You know, it does when you're there. I mean, on TV it looks big, but when you're there, it seems like stuff's right around the corner, you know?
Especially if you're walking across the island. Like, you're looking at a map, and you look at it and realize the island's only at its widest point 15 to 18 streets across or
yeah.
avenues across. You're like, it can't be that bad. The avenues are ridiculously long.
Well, when we were in Manhattan last, when was it? Was it last summer? I don't know. last summer, two summers, I don't remember when we went. I think it was two summers ago. It does, and just like 30 Rock, okay? The building that NBC, you know, has all their shows in and offices and blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
That building, it seems like it's right in the middle of, in Manhattan. It's right in the middle of everything. Everything is right next to it, or everything's right around the corner. In reality, that's not the case, but it seems to be so close. When, and I remember being out around, like I was at Sirius, and 30 Rock was right there. I mean, it just, it didn't seem that far away. And like everything is really confined. At least that's how it seems until you get out and start walking it. And then when you're walking, you know, being from Springfield, where we never walk, and you're walking around, you realize just how far things are. And how out of shape you are and everything else. But I'm saying that, that you really, you start to realize just how far, and the people from who live there, the people who are from that area, it seems like nothing to them. And you realize how used to walking they are. And everybody should see it at least once, you know.
Well, it's funny too, you talk about everything being so confined. You know, people that live in lower Manhattan or live over in Queens or Brooklyn or over in New Jersey, when you look, you get to see the Freedom Tower, the Empire State Building, yeah, all of those things. But when you're in the middle of the city, you can't, you don't necessarily know what building you're looking at. I had a friend in town and she called me and she said, "Hey, I really want to see the Empire State Building. How do I get there from my hotel?" So she gave me her address, and her address was right next door to the Empire State Building. But she was so close to the Empire State Building, when she's looking at it, all she sees are bricks. Now, I don't understand how she missed everybody walking around going, "Would you like to go to the top of the building? Would you like to go to the top of the building? Would you like to go to the top of the building?" Because they're everywhere.
I can't find the Empire State Building. Well, look up.
Yeah, it's right there.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, it is.
You're,
I mean,
staying right beside it.
It's different from Chicago. I mean, New York is a lot different from Chicago.
Well, Chicago is like if New York was clean,
yeah,
and made an allowance for the fact that people lived there.
Yeah, and it was wider. Chicago, yep, is not as confined a space as New York City.
The difference for me with Chicago, and I spent a bunch of time there and really loved the city, but you can walk for blocks sometimes. It's the same in Boston. It's the same in San Francisco, too. You can walk for blocks at a time in the heart of the city and not find a restaurant, not find a bar, not find anything like that. In New York, you can't walk a block without running past seven Irish bars and three restaurants and a slice place.
But that's what makes it special. You know, it's that,
yep,
just how fabulous it is. Oh, man. I am amazed by that city. Hey, do you ever go to, I don't know if you're a baseball fan or not. Do you ever go to any Mets games?
I am a huge baseball fan. I don't go to Mets games because I've had bad luck. I've not been to Citi Field, but I've had bad luck at Shea Stadium with getting escorted out of the park. So
why were you escorted out of the park?
Very first time I ever came to New York, I wanted to go to a ball game. The Mets were playing the Giants. This is when Barry Bonds was, you know, juiced up and chasing the home run record.
Right.
And so I went to the park, and it started to rain. And so obviously it was a rain delay. I'm a huge nerd. I will walk around every corner of a baseball stadium. I want to see every bit of it. I'm even reading a book right now about the construction of Fenway Park that reads like a textbook, but like I like to know those things.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah,
the rain delay didn't bother me because it gave me an opportunity to see every part of the stadium. But then the game starts. There's probably 5,000 people in the stadium. So I wait till the end of the first inning and I go sit down. Just, you know, my seats were in the upper deck because that's what was available because everybody bought tickets to see Bonds. And so by the time the game started, there were seats like field level. So I sat down. And within two innings, security guard walks up to me and says, "Sir, I need to see your ticket." And I told him, and Ray, keep in mind, there had been many times in my life where maybe I was rude, misbehaved, maybe been overserved and asked to leave. This was not one of, or should have been asked to leave that wasn't. This was not one of those times. He walks up to me and says, "Sir, I need to see your ticket." So I show him my ticket, and then he goes into his walkie-talkie. "We got one."
He's all excited.
They used 13 guys to throw me out of that stadium.
Because you were sitting in
somebody else's seat.
Yeah, a section that, by the way, that no one was sitting in.
No one. I was the only person in the entire section. So I really thought at first they were just going to take me out of that area. But when it became abundantly clear that they were escorting me out, and they didn't have to put their hands on me, anything. And again, All it would have taken was one guy to say, "Would you leave?" And so 13 guys are surrounding me and we're walking out. And as I go to leave, the one young, yoked up guy pushes me. He's like, "And stay out." That's when I became not nice. But there were 13 guys and not me.
Right.
So as I'm walking around the corner, this guy tells me, he goes, "Hey, look, I'm not going to go back in. I came out to smoke. I got to go. The rain delay here. Take my ticket." I saw what they did. That wasn't cool. So I go to go back in. And they scan my ticket, and they're like, "Sir, this ticket's been used already." I said, "Well, you allow for reentry. Just went out to smoke." They said, "Sir, we're nicely telling you that your ticket is counterfeit. We're going to ask you to leave, or we'll call the police."
Oh, my God.
So I left and saw that guy again. He hadn't been out there. He was trying to get rid of his counterfeit tickets because the cops were coming up to him. So then, like, 3 weeks later, I'm at the game. Girlfriend's with me this time. Yankees aren't in town. Take her to Shea. We both get a beer, go downstairs to get her and myself another round. And I've got like maybe a quarter of my beer left. And I buy her a Bud Light and me a Budweiser. And I walk around the corner and the security guard walks up. He goes, "Sir, you've got 3 beers." And I look at him. I go, 1, 2, 3. "Yep, you can count. Glad to see that public school education's working out for you." He said, "I can throw you out for that." I said, "What, for being witty?" He said, "No, having 3 beers."
What?
Because apparently they're not supposed to serve you. You're not supposed to have more than 2 at a time. And so I got really upset. I was like, "That guy shouldn't have served me because it's not his responsibility. I'm going to have to ask you to leave, sir." So I chug what's left of, you know, like I said, I had like a quarter of a beer. I chug it and I throw it in garbage. And I look at him and go, 1, 2. Now I only have 2. And he stared at me really hard and then started laughing and was like, "Don't let me catch you doing that again." So I've not had a desire to go back out to Flushing, which is a rat hole, by the way, where the stadium is.
Is it really?
Yes. There's a great bar that they built into the backside of the stadium called McFadden's or something like that. They had to because, like, unlike – and you would think, you know – the Bronx might be a little rougher than Queens. Flushing, it's just a bunch of old garages and stuff where they have the stadium. And there's nothing built up around it. Whereas opposed to like Yankee, you've got stands and you've got Dave's. There used to be a great bowling alley bar, which was always a lot of fun before they tore down old Yankee Stadium.
Right.
Which is now like some big, oh, it's Billy's, that's what it's called. But it's, I've been to Shea and got thrown out. I've been to Yankee and normally try to go to the home opener every year.
So
it's cold enough that you have to wear long johns.
Even though you live in Queens, you go to the Yankee games instead of the Mets games.
Yes. Well, and keep in mind, I've only been in Queens about 6 months.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. And before I lived right off the 4, which let you out right at Yankee Stadium.
So the Bronx is. Yeah, now I've been to Yankee Stadium. I've never been to. I don't think I've ever been to. Well, I've driven through Queens, but I've never been to a Mets game, and that was back in Shea.
Yeah.
I certainly have never been to Citi Field, but I have been to a Yankees game, and the old Yankee Stadium, and I loved it. I mean, that was fantastic. That's baseball. That is. I mean, only Wrigley Field. I've never been to Fenway, but only Wrigley Field could match up to the old Yankee Stadium. That was a lot of fun when I lived in Syracuse. We would go down to Yankee Stadium. That was a lot of fun.
But Wrigley is awesome. Old Yankee was awesome. The new stadium is really nice.
That's what I hear. Go
to Fenway sometime, and go to the bleacher bar, because in the it's actually built into the bottom of the stadium, but there is like this 8-foot section of wall that they open up in the bleacher bar, and there's like a screen right there, and on the other side of the screen is the warning track.
Oh, very cool.
So you get this amazing view of the stadium. They normally close the doors after the game starts, so you don't get to watch the game there.
Right.
But it's a great spot to just kind of see Fenway and take some really cool pictures. I'll tell you the coolest thing to do as far as sporting for me that I've done since we've been here, and I'm not a huge tennis fan, but the U.S. Open is like nothing I've ever seen before. And every year, August or September, you know, whatever the date happens to fall, they do Community Day, and it's free to get in.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And, I mean, you're not watching Serena play and things like that, but I did get to see what I thought was a very athletic Asian accountant or somebody like that play. Come to find out it was Michael Chang. He's still in the tour. But it's a really – Arthur Ashe Stadium is beautiful. It's a really unique experience. I mean, you can go to baseball games everywhere, and they're great cathedrals, and everybody has to see them. But the most fun thing I've done sporting wise up here has been going up to the U.S. Open and just getting to see those grounds and watch all the access you have. You're so close to the players, and there's not a ton of people there because it's during the middle of the day, like on a Thursday when people are working. It's definitely worth the trip itself.
That's fantastic. That would have been the last thing I picked, but yeah, I bet that's great.
Yeah, we only went because it was free.
Yeah,
which when you live in New York, you do that a lot.
You know, like the good free things.
Yeah.
Oh,
but it's definitely worth it.
Well, listen, I could talk all day, but we are out of time. I want to thank you. AC Rowe is a stand-up comedian in New York City, and he's also a writer. And man, I got my fingers crossed for you, dude. I really hope that I hope you get stuff. I hope the stuff gets picked up, and you and your writing partner get, you know, all your dreams come true. I've really enjoyed the conversation today, and this is unlike any. I don't know if you get a chance to listen to the podcast, but this is really unlike any show that we do. It's usually a regular show where we talk about everything. This was more of an interview, but I really enjoyed it, and I love the glimpse into New York City that you shared with us today. I thought it was really cool.
Well, Ray, I appreciate you having me on, and the way you very politely just told me I ruined your show.
No, that's not what I meant. It was special, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having me on. It's been great. It's shameless plug, New York Comedy Club. 11:30 Friday night, we're taping for SiriusXM doing Paid or Pain, and then Sunday night at Eastville Comedy Club, and there at 7:00 if anybody in New York happens to be listening.
I think it's fantastic. Listen, it is AC. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, man. I'd love to have you on again, you know, because I thought you were hysterical. And I'd love you to join for like a normal just like a regular show. You were fantastic. I really thank you, man, and I wish you luck.
Thank you, Ray. I tell you, I'd love to do the show again. Just reach out and let me know when.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. It's AC Rowe. He's joining us on today's Morning Disaster. And, well, listen, it's we've done the full time. And I know it's Valentine's Day. People are going to go, what? Valentine's? You did an interview show on Valentine's Day? Listen, that was fun. That was a lot of fun talking about the things we discussed. And AC's very – man, that brother-cousin shit, that was hysterical. Brother, cousin, sister, cousin, fantastic. Listen, when you listen to today's podcast, let your friends know. Go to social media. Go to Facebook. Go to Twitter. Let them know the Morning Disaster today was a pretty good show, and I want you to share it. It is morningdisaster.net. Of course, we're on TuneIn Radio app, and we're available everywhere. So share with everybody and let them know how they listen to today's show. It is Morning Disaster. That's it for today's show. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow morning. So long, everybody.